2-1 Padres. Here's the pitch. Fly ball. Center field. Margot going back to the wall. He leaps, and it's a grand slam home run. Will Smith strikes again.
The Dodgers rookie hits the grand slam there last night to help the Dodgers win over the Padres. Royals were not in action, so that's why we lead that with a baseball talk with that, as the Dodgers went over the Padres 8-2. Will Smith grand slam, and big night from Clayton Kershaw yet again for the for the Dodgers against the Padres. As again, the Dodgers won it 8-2. They have the Major League best record of 72-39. Clayton Kershaw only struck out 5 last night, did walk 5. He didn't have his best stuff, but hey, held them to 2 runs, and that's all they need. Speaking of the Padres, people might know and remember that Eric Hosmer plays for the Padres, and it's just an opportunity here to real quick go over what's going on with Hosmer. He's hitting .282 this year, and .442 slugging percentage, his OBP's .333. Hosmer, I would say, probably hasn't panned out to what the Padres really wanted him to be, but I guess can't take too much away from him. He's had some success there. Manny Machado this year is hitting only .277, got that big money in the offseason for the Padres, and again, they're now 50-58 on the season. So, just the way it goes there for the San Diego Padres here. I never know when my computer's not going to want to work for me, and today is one of those days. So bear with me here as I kind of close out some of the things that I don't need up here anymore and try to get this thing to speed up a little bit. The Dodgers have the best record in baseball. And again, with that record, they are 72-39. Again, we welcome you into the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94. A lot of different things that we'll touch upon here today. I'm going to go over a little bit of the Chiefs, kind of the Chiefs roster, and see where they're at this point in time, and seeing maybe what they've got. We talked a little bit yesterday about some position changes and things of that nature, and guys playing in different spots here this year. So we'll cover that here coming up on the Sports Ticket here this morning. Also, a look at Major League Baseball with some suspensions, an interesting story out of Cleveland as well. And then in football, there's some guys holding out, and other notes to pass along from the NFL ranks, and also a college football story to tell you about. But again, in Major League Baseball, the standings right now, we kind of went over them yesterday, but again, the Dodgers are in first place at 72-39. They're 16 games ahead of the San Francisco Giants in the National League West. They have a plus 171 run differential, which is without question the best in the major leagues. The closest after that is 128 with both Houston and Minnesota. Houston now 70-40, by the way. They win, I think they played last night. Yeah, they beat Cleveland 7-1. So the Indians are now 3 games behind the Twins for first place in the American League Central after that loss to Houston last night. They're 63-45. Twins are 66-42. The Yankees are 68-39. They now have the percentage points is the same for the best record in the American League. The Astros are 70-40. Yankees 68-39. They both have win percentages of .636. So virtually a tie there at the top of the American League. And by percentage points, they have the Astros just a half a game ahead because of the more wins, the two more wins that they have compared to the Yankees, 68. They have 70, and just one more loss for the Astros compared to 40-39 for those two teams. So those are the top teams in the American League. And again, the Twins are in first place in the American League Central, as we mentioned, and that'll be the next opponent for the Kansas City Royals. We'll talk about that here momentarily. The rest of the National League standings at this point in time have the Braves in first place, 7 games ahead of both the Nationals and Phillies. Braves are 65-45. National League Central, the Cardinals are in first place at 58-50. 1 game ahead of the Cubs, who are 57-51. 2 games ahead of the Brewers, 57-53. So those are the teams that look like they're in contention for the championship in the National League Central. We talked about the other day with the Mets, and they made a trade for Marcus Stroman there at the deadline. They did trade Jason Vargas to the Phillies. As we look now at the wild card standings to see where the Mets are at, they still have to jump all those teams that I mentioned the other day. Now they're only a half a game behind, and a game and a half behind two of those teams. But again, it was just kind of a weird trade to go after Stroman. The Mets have won 7 games in a row, though. They currently have the best winning streak in the major leagues at 7 straight. So maybe they're trying and going to make a run here at the end of the season, but that'll be interesting if they do, to say the least. Again, the Twins and Royals will begin a three-game series tonight. The Royals, we've talked so much about them as they, again, started so hot after the All-Star break. They won 6 of 7 to start after the break. But, again, they were playing the Tigers and White Sox. And I think Ned Yost, everybody kind of knew that we really haven't played anybody yet to really get too excited about what we're doing. And so now they've lost 6 of their last 7 after winning 6 of 7 to come out of the All-Star break. They've lost 6 of 7 now. And they got swept by the Toronto Blue Jays, who are not really good this year. They went 1-6 against Toronto this year. And so now they have a day off. They're reeling after that. They're trying to get back into the swing of things here. And they will play again against the Twins tonight. Game one of a three-game set at Target Field is at 7-10. Glenn Sparkman is 3-7 with a 5.25 ERA. Pitching for the Royals against Martin Perez of the Twins, who is 8-4 with a 4.38 ERA here in 2019. So that's the matchup tonight between the Royals and Twins. I was excited. Man, I was excited about some of the things the Royals were doing. But both Wade and I were talking about, and as we said, Ned Yost said as well, let's not get too excited here. Let's not overreact because we haven't really played anybody yet. So they've started seeing some good teams again. The Indians were a big part of that. I think they went 2-5, I believe, against the Indians in 7 games that they played since the All-Star break. They won one game in a three-game series and another game in a four-game series. So, yeah, they were 2-5 in 7 games that they played against the Indians and 0-3, as we mentioned, against the Blue Jays. So since they started winning 6 of 7, they have lost those twos. They've lost 8 of their last 10. And as we mentioned, 6 of their last 7 going into this series with the Twins. So the Royals have work to do. But again, I like the direction that they've gone here and getting rid of and DFAing Lucas Duda. I haven't seen anything new from him, by the way. I'm going to double check and see if he's been picked up or anything's happened with Lucas Duda, because he's got the period where he'll go through and see if he can get through waivers and things of that nature. But nobody's going to trade for him while he's designated for assignment. I'm fairly certain of that. The latest was 5 days ago when he was designated for assignment. So he was DFA'd, and then Ryan O'Hearn came back up for the Royals. You like that. I like the fact that they're bringing these younger guys up to give them a shot, like we've talked about with Bubba Starling and all those things, those guys that have come up for the Royals. The younger guys that are out here, Kyle Zimmer comes up after the trade of Jake Diekman. So you've got another younger guy coming up there at that point in time. So this is what it is. You got to ride the roller coaster here and try to get yourself in a situation where you get these young guys enough playing time. They start gaining some confidence. That might not turn into wins necessarily, but it turns into confidence, and they're able to get ready for the next season and feel comfortable about coming in to start the 2020 season here next year. So Bubba Starling, by the way, if you're wondering how he's doing since he got called up, he's played in 15 games this year, .276 average in those games. As far as hitting is concerned, he's hit 1 home run, has 3 RBI, 21 bases, total bases. He's walked 3 times and struck out 18 times. So total hits, he has 16 hits and 18 strikeouts. So that's one of the things that obviously was, I think, for everybody was a concern with Bubba Starling coming up. I'm going to double check and make sure those are the right stats, because sometimes you get a little bit behind there as far as that's concerned. So let me double check and make sure I've got the right notes for Bubba Starling. 15 games, 16 hits and 18 strikeouts, .276 average. His OPS is .674. Has 1 stolen base as well. We didn't mention that there. A couple doubles and a home run, 3 RBI. He hasn't hit for power, and I think that's one of the things we talked about that probably wouldn't happen with Bubba, would be that power right off the bat here in the major leagues. But, you know, he's getting on base. He's been on base 19 times, struck out 18 times. So, you know, he doesn't have a great slugging percentage compared to his batting average. Slugging is just .362. So that comes with, you know, your extra base hits, your home runs, and things of that nature. Those aren't coming right now for Bubba Starling, but I did kind of want to give a full update through the first 15 games there for Bubba Starling. You know, you got Humberto Arteaga, Mibris Valoria is playing right now. for the Royals at catcher because of the trade of Maldonado. So he's your second catcher at this point in time, which is what they thought it might be going into the season, but it hasn't played out that way. Valoria's only played in 7 games this year, but he is hitting .273, a couple RBI. Wanted to double check and see what the Arteaga was doing here for the Royals in his time here in the majors this year. He's played in 21 games, and he hits just .191, so he doesn't really have a good stick right now. He's got just 13 hits in 21 games this year for the Royals. 3 RBIs, walked 4 times. These aren't guys that have a lot of power or anything like that. Really, the only guy that's still remaining on the team that maybe people might question a little bit would be Billy Hamilton, as far as that youth movement that we're seeing. But I don't think Billy Hamilton will be going anywhere here this season, other than staying with the Royals. So, but Billy Hamilton's a guy that, you know, he hasn't been off the charts or anything like that this year, but an outfielder that they've got out there that it seems that they're probably going to be keeping at least throughout and through the end of this season. So kind of an update on the Royals. Again, they get set to take on the Twins tonight. Whit Merrifield, .300 average this year, has 138 hits, only has 15 stolen bases this year, so that's kind of gone down. But obviously Whit is the leader as far as offense is concerned for this Royals team. And Jorge Soler still at 28 home runs, still on pace to break the Royals all-time single-season record for home runs. It was set by Mike Moustakas a couple years back with 38. So we'll keep an eye on Jorge Soler. So those are the things we're looking at right now. Those are the things that we have to be positive about with the Royals, or Whit Merrifield, and see if he can lead the league in hits, and Jorge Soler to see if he can break the record for the most home runs in a single season for the Royals. So that's where we're at right now. Again, the Royals and Twins play tonight at 7:10 to start their 3-game series. Here's an interesting story in the major leagues. First, actually, let's go back to the other night when we talked about that big brawl that happened with the Reds and Pirates. That has resulted in a total of 40 games worth of bans from the major leagues. Major League Baseball announcing on Thursday they suspended 6 players and both managers for their roles in the benches clearing brawl between the Pirates and Reds on Tuesday night. Reds manager David Bell got a 6-game suspension. Amir Garrett, an 8-game suspension for the Pirates, which is kind of big. He's a relief pitcher. He's not a starting pitcher. So you could say 8 games for a starter would be, you'd miss one. If you work it the right way, honestly, you could go where you just miss one start. But for 8 games for a reliever, that's a fairly high suspension. And I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve it. Garrett ran to that dugout just by himself, the Reds reliever, and just came in with a left and another left and landed it. And then he got just pummeled because he was the only Reds player over there at the time, right at the Pirates dugout. And they just dogpiled on him and just went on and on there. Also, Jared Hughes, pitcher, was disciplined, 3-game suspension for the Reds. Yasiel Puig, who was in the middle of all that and fighting, and during all that had already been, the announcement had already been made that he was traded to the Indians. More on that coming up with the Indians part of that trade. But Yasiel Puig was suspended for 3 games there, so he'll go to the Indians and have to sit out 3 games. And then Pirates pitcher Keona Kila got the longest ban, 10 games for intentionally throwing a pitch near the head of Reds' Derek Dietrich and later instigating the brawl. Teammates Jose Osuna of the Pirates got a 5-game suspension. Kyle Crick, 3 games. And manager Clint Hurdle, a 2-game suspension by Major League Baseball. You're wondering why Clint Hurdle's is only 2 games and Reds manager David Bell is 6 games. David Bell had already been ejected from the game, the manager. And he came out of the clubhouse and back into the dugout and then back onto the field after he'd already been ejected from the game. So he was not even a participant in the game anymore and came back out. So I would guess that that's probably why he's got 6 games and Clint Hurdle just got suspended for 2 games. So Joe Torre, chief baseball officer for the Major League, said the incidents between these two clubs remain a source of concern and is reflected by the level of discipline we are handing down today. Everyone on the field should be aware of the example, that they're setting for fans, particularly young people. I firmly expect these two managers and all others to hold their players accountable for appropriate conduct and to guide them in the right direction. So all 6 players have appealed their suspensions and can continue to play until those appeals are heard. Bell began his suspension on Thursday night. Hurdle will begin serving his ban coming up on Friday. Bell said, I didn't have a say. I didn't talk to anyone. I want to be in the dugout. We'll be fine, but I have a responsibility to be in the dugout, so that part I'm remorseful. It's my job, but I can't live with handling it any other way. So, again, 10 games for Keona Kila, the Pirates pitcher, for intentionally throwing the head and instigating a brawl is why he got 10 games and a lot of suspensions being handed out. So we told you Yasiel Puig gets a 3-game suspension. He'd been traded in the Indians. Here's a story that's just, it's kind of crazy, but the Cleveland Indians dealt starting pitcher Trevor Bauer to the Cincinnati Reds as part of that 3-team deal that also included the San Diego Padres right before the deadline. But despite being moved, Bauer still showed up to Progressive Field for the Indians game against the Houston Astros on Wednesday. He went to the game as a fan and was spotted in the stands. And this is from GV Art and Apparel, a Twitter account. It says, he's crazy, but I love it. Who else does this? Trevor Bauer at the Tribe game, just being an ordinary fan. Yeah, he was just, he's got a T-shirt on. He's got a backpack on for some reason. He said Bauer was also seen signing autographs during the game. And another tweet, dude gets traded and still shows up. Going to miss you, Bauer. Good luck. I'll always cheer for you. So, he just shows up to the game. And like they said, it's certainly been a strange week for the former Cleveland pitcher. His final appearance on the mound, you'll remember last Sunday, he surrendered 5 runs in the 5th inning, a total of 7 runs earned and 8 total runs given up against the Royals. And then he had a meltdown and hurled the ball over the center field wall from the pitcher's mound. And all this happens, he gets traded then on Tuesday night. And he comes back, comes to the game anyway. I've been traded. Oh, well, I'm still going to show up. He's there at the game on Wednesday night. Trevor Bauer eventually, and I would hope by now, has made it to Cincinnati. Again, traded by the Indians to the Reds. The Indians getting Yasiel Puig back. And Yasiel Puig now has to wait it out and see if he's going to sit out a 3-game suspension or if he's going to win anything on an appeal to get that lowered or not. So all kinds of weird things happening in Major League Baseball, and more particularly weird things happening in Major League Baseball in the state of Ohio at this point in time. So, again, Trevor Bauer headed to the Reds, as we mentioned, and Yasiel Puig to the Indians from the Reds. So that's an update on Major League Baseball. All right, there might have been one other thing that I had for the baseball side of things. I want to double-check that I didn't miss anything that I wanted to talk about here. I think we covered it all, so we'll move on. We have a former Ohio State quarterback that's going to TCU, Matthew Baldwin, and it's kind of funny, we talked about this yesterday. If you have 6 quarterbacks, do you have 1 quarterback? For TCU, and Matthew Baldwin was one of those guys that was in the mix of the 6 quarterbacks that Gary Patterson is trying to weed through. Well, he doesn't have to worry about Matthew Baldwin anymore. The former Ohio State quarterback Matthew Baldwin had his transfer waiver denied by the NCAA. Former 4-star prospect from Lake Travis High School in Austin, Texas, joined the Horned Frogs in June after competing against Justin Fields for the Buckeyes starting job in spring practice. Although his request for immediate eligibility was denied, 24/7 Sports is reporting that TCU is planning to file an appeal on Baldwin's behalf. If that appeal is denied, then the NCAA sticks to its initial ruling. Baldwin will have to sit out the 2019 season before he's eligible to compete for the Horned Frogs. If you remember, former K-State quarterback Alex Delton is also part of that quarterback battle, as well as Max Duggan, Justin Rogers, Mike Collins are the other names that are in there in that quarterback battle. So we'll see if Alex Delton gets a chance to play. The Hayes, Kansas native there at TCU. And his chances obviously get better if Matthew Baldwin is not able to play this year, the Ohio State transfer. We'll keep an eye on that. College football here, a lot of things getting going here with fall practice beginning at most places there yesterday, and that includes Kansas State. They're in, ready to go and start the fall practices. College football opens out on August 31st, if you're interested in that, where K-State opens out the season at home at Bill Snyder Family Stadium against Nicholls. And then the KU football team also opens that day. I've got to double-check who they're opening out with here, and that's Indiana State on August 31st at 11. K-State opens at 6 o'clock August 31st against Nicholls. That's who KU played in their season opener a year ago. So Nicholls coming back to Kansas for a second year in a row on the opening night of college football. As, It's coming up, whether we're ready or not. By the way, our high school football schedule has been released. You can check out katycountry94.com for our high school football broadcast schedule, which high school football didn't start till the next week here for our area teams, which will be on September 6th. Our plan as of now, schedule is always subject to change, by the way, if you look at that on katycountry94.com. Plan right now is to have Lakeside at Thunder Ridge on Katy Country 94 and Beloit at Fairbury, Nebraska on Z96.3 Through the Lake on the first night of the high school football season, September 6th. Get our full schedule at katycountry94.com. You can always listen to our games online at katycountry94.com as well throughout the high school football season. College football, by the way, some of the games will start on August 24th. Miami plays Florida that weekend, and as does Arizona is playing Hawaii. Those are kind of the two most notable games. Hard to believe that's, I mean, that's 3 weeks away. So we're going to be going and ready to roll, raring and ready to go with college football. 3 weeks from tomorrow is the open of the college football season. So brace yourself and be ready. Football is almost coming for all those football junkies out there. It's almost time for football season, and we're looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to covering high school football here on Katy Country 94 throughout the 2019 season. All right, speaking of football, the NFL football season opened out last night, if you can call it that, opening out. The Broncos and Falcons playing in the Hall of Fame game in the preseason.
Griffin drops the throw, bounces around, throws the ball backside of the end zone, deflected and caught! Touchdown, Denver! Great catch there by Jawan Winfrey. That ball was deflected for on the contested throw. Winfrey caught the deflection, stayed with it, got both feet down, secured the football, and Jawan Winfrey with the touchdown reception.
Jawan Winfrey? Who would make a bet that Jawan Winfrey, we might not, probably won't even hear that name during the regular season for the Denver Broncos. He had one catch for 15 yards, and that was in the fourth quarter for the Broncos, the touchdown that put him up 14-10. Brett Rippon, probably won't hear that name during the season. Brett Rippon, by the way, is the nephew of former Washington Redskins quarterback Mark Rippon. Brett Rippon played at Boise State, and he was not drafted, so he was a undrafted free agent signing by the Broncos here during the offseason. He was the Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Year last year. All that in a nickel gets you a cup of coffee is what they used to say. But, yeah, Mark Rippon. Listen, Mark Rippon's name is probably going to be more well-known in the annals of football than and I already forgot his first name, Brett Rippon. I shouldn't laugh about it, but he is the nephew of Mark Rippon, who led the Washington Redskins to a Super Bowl, was a Super Bowl MVP in 1991 season when they beat the Buffalo Bills. So, if you thought you might have recognized that Rippon name, that's because you did. Former NFL quarterback is his uncle. As far as the Broncos were concerned, I said I was going to watch this game, but I actually had some other things come up where I didn't really see much of it. I had it on the TV in the background. Didn't really watch a lot of it. Kurt Benkert from the Falcons went 19 of 34 for 185 yards and a touchdown in the game. The leader for the Broncos was actually Rippon with 41 yards passing, but only averaged 4 yards per pass, per completion, I should say. Actually, per attempt, it was 4 yards. Kevin Hogan, you might remember Kevin Hogan, he played for the Chiefs at one point from Stanford and came out of college with the Chiefs, but they had let him go, and he ends up with the Broncos. And I believe he actually started the game last night for Denver. I want to make sure that... Yeah, Hogan started last night for Denver and didn't fare real well, 5 of 8 for 37 yards. Drew Locke from Missouri, the rookie quarterback, the Broncos draft pick here, he threw 7 of 11. You said, hey, good night for him, and 34 yards. So 34 yards on 11 attempts, that's 3.1 yards per attempt. Not great. He was sacked a couple times. Again, it's a preseason game. I don't know that anybody's really paying a whole lot of attention, especially the Spurs game, because Joe Flacco didn't even play last night, and he's expected to be the Broncos starter here this year, coming over from the Ravens in free agency. But Flacco didn't play. You don't get to see Matt Ryan play last night for the Falcons. This wasn't even really a football game. Oh, I say that. I joke, but it was a football game. But how many people knew that Matt Schaub was still alive? You remember Matt Schaub? Matt Schaub was a starting quarterback at one point for the Falcons. And Matt Ryan took over as the Falcons quarterback. I had no idea he was still in the NFL. He came in 2004, spent two seasons as a starter for Atlanta, and then went to Houston, Oakland, Baltimore. And the reason I didn't even know he was, he sat out the entire 2017 season, but he went back to Atlanta in 2016, went 1 of 3 passing, went 5 of 7 passing last year for the Falcons. I seriously had no idea he was back with Atlanta and playing for the Falcons until I saw, like, number 8 for the Falcons. That was Matt Schaub back in the day. Oh, that is Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub went 4 of 14 for 10 yards passing and an interception last night. Not a good night for the veteran quarterback, and he's hanging on by a thread. I'd be a little bit disappointed. You got to hope that Matt Ryan doesn't get hurt if you're the Falcons. I'm going to tell you that right now. If you're a Falcons fan, I guess your backup quarterback, Kurt Benkert, which I don't even know much about this guy, but he was out there playing last night for the Falcons, and he actually outplayed Drew Lock without question again, 19 of 34, 185 yards and a touchdown. And Kurt Benkert, quarterback from Virginia, is where he came from, and he is he's a rookie this year, it looks like, there for the Falcons. So, yeah. We'll see what he can do. He's apparently your backup quarterback, because I wouldn't feel very comfortable with Matt Schaub being the backup quarterback for Matt Ryan. Broncos win last night 14-10 over the Falcons. So, again, that was the first preseason game. The rest of the preseason games won't start until next week. And as far as the Chiefs are concerned, their first preseason game comes up on Saturday, where they will face the Cincinnati Bengals at 7 o'clock. At Arrowhead Stadium next Saturday night. So we'll kind of preview that a little bit more. We'll hear a lot from the Chiefs coming up during the next couple of weeks. You heard this yesterday, but we'll play it again. Kendall Fuller of the Chiefs met with the media on Wednesday and kind of talked about playing in Steve Spagnuolo's new defense. We're going to talk a little bit about the Chiefs defense here and where everybody fits, but here's Kendall Fuller.
I think coming in, when I went to Virginia Tech, we had our DB coach. He just always preached us on learning how to be a DB, not just learning how to play one position. And I think that's one thing that, you know, in this system, the nickel does. You know, you have to do a lot of different things. They ask you to do a lot of different things. So, you know, you're out there. Some people say you're just playing one position, but the way you're playing it is almost as if you're playing corner, nickel, safety, and all that. So it's been fun.
Kendall Fuller again for the Kansas City Chiefs. Last year, as we mentioned yesterday, he played more on the outside than you would have wanted him to, just his skill set. Forces him probably to be more of an inside corner, a slot corner. He talked there about, you know, you have to be able to play different positions in Steve Spagnuolo's system, and really as a defensive back, you want to be able to play different positions and be able to go all over the place, which the Chiefs have some guys like that on their roster this year. Again, we've kind of talked a little bit about that already, but just kind of in-depth a little bit of a look at what the Chiefs have, because we talked about yesterday where one of their defensive backs is no longer on defense. He's been moved to running back, Tremont Smith, the sixth-round draft pick out of Central Arkansas last year, and played defensive back more with kick returner and a speedster in Dave Tobes' return game last year is where you heard his name more often than not. There were times out of necessity that he did have to play at defensive back, but he has been moved now to running back, and like we said yesterday, I'm not going to rehash the whole conversation that I had about it yesterday, but it's more of a do we have a running back on this team situation than a, oh, cool, Tremont Smith's moving over to running back, this is a fun story. Listen, it's a fun story, but like I said yesterday, the Chiefs running back situation is not good if you're moving Tremont Smith, who has never been a natural running back in his life. He said he played running back like his first couple years of high school, but he was a quarterback and a wide receiver in high school. He was Alabama Player of the Year, and apparently has changed his number too. Interesting. I don't know why you can't just keep number 39 if you're a running back, but whatever. He's changed his number to 20. Didn't realize that, but because I was looking for him, I'm like, where's he at on this roster that I'm looking at? So Tremont Smith has moved over to running back. and we'll see if it works. Like I said yesterday, I think it's more of a maybe a H-back type of player, where kind of what they did with Tyreek Hill early on in his career, where it wasn't always lining up as a receiver, but he'd line him up in the backfield and just get him the ball with his speed and athleticism. And I really think that's the case here with Tremont Smith. So you've eliminated a corner there, and does that make a big difference? I don't know. Your actual listed corners for the Kansas City Chiefs right now that are listed as just strictly cornerbacks are Bashaud Breeland, Rashad Fenton, who is a rookie out of South Carolina that's probably not going to make the team, Kendall Fuller, who you just heard from, should make the team, Michael Hunter, second year man out of Oklahoma State, and Charvarius Ward, who came over in the trade from the Cowboys last year. I would expect him to make the team and play for the Chiefs here this year. So those are the actual corners. Okay, you've got other defensive backs, Mark Fields, Harold Jones, Cordy, Herb Miller, Dakari Monroe, Keith Reeser, you can take him out. He's got an Achilles injury. Sounds like he blew his Achilles. Another defensive back, Andrew Soro. I mean, we're talking about guys that we don't know anything about right now, Demontre Wade. But the guys that you need to keep an eye on in this new defense for Steve Spagnuolo, at the defensive back position, the rookie Juan Thornhill, who we've heard from, and he's talking about kind of learning from Tyrann Mathieu here in the offseason. By the way, Tyrann Mathieu is in, listed as a safety, but can play very all over the place, just different positions for this Chiefs defense. So we're talking about all week, and we've heard some things from coaches, and Steve Spagnuolo talked about it earlier this week as well, about this defense and whether they could be better than the 31st-ranked defense in the league. And so, you know, that's the key here. Can they make those improvements? And for me, a lot of that starts in the defensive backfield, because the Chiefs have struggled against really good quarterbacks, and they've really struggled throughout the last few seasons in that. And that scheme's always been a problem, though, when you're talking about that with everything that Bob Sutton brings to the table and didn't bring to the table as well. So, you know, it's interesting, I guess, to see what they've got there at that cornerback position. And now you take away Tremont Smith. And, again, we heard earlier from Spagnuolo earlier this week, but I kind of want to play this again because of what we're talking about since that move happened the other day, where Steve Spagnuolo was talking about the cornerback position on his team.
Yeah, it's all about technique. I mean, we're going to – I'll be honest with you. I'm really trying to find out what we have at corner insofar as what they can do. It'll probably dictate what we play coverage-wise. We're throwing a lot at them, so we got a plethora of different coverages. Once we get a feel for what they can and can't do, we'll cut it down and settle in. So I'm just evaluating that as we go. We're giving them everything.
So, if you missed it earlier this week as well, this is what Spagnuolo had to say about Kendall Fuller and where they want to play him.
Kendall's going to master that nickel spot. We got to find a backup there, too. And then in emergencies or at times, he may go outside. But I think that's a natural position for him.
So, again, not much outside for Kendall Fuller. So that's what we're looking at, is that defensive back position and the corner position in particular, because there's not a lot of names there. Steven Nelson was let go in the offseason. He's off somewhere else. You know, some of these other guys that were in the defensive backfield for the Chiefs are no longer in Kansas City. And so they're trying to find different spots for different people and see what they can do at the cornerback position. Leslie, you hear Steven Nelson, he's going to master that nickel. You think, he's a nickel. He's not even a starting corner. Yeah, defenses play in the NFL this day and age where there's such a emphasis on throwing the football, where there's the nickels out there all the time almost. When you know it's passing down situations, Kendall Fuller is going to be out on the field more often than not, even though he's not that starting shutdown corner on the outside. He's going to be out there and playing a key role on this team. And what you hope is that the rookie Juan Thornhill can be a guy like that, that can play a lot of different positions. He comes in, he's drafted as a safety, I believe, but he's listed as a defensive back because you want to be able to play different spots with Juan Thornhill. So he's a guy. And then, as we said, the new acquisition at safety is Tyrann Mathieu. Jordan Lucas has shown some things at that safety position at times. They liked Armani Watts last year before he got hurt, so we'll keep an eye on him to see if he can do anything different. And then you've got Daniel Sorensen. Now, you really feel more comfortable about the safety position than you do about the corner position at this point in time, just based on what people think about the guys that are on the team here right now. So we'll keep an eye on this Chiefs defense and see if they can make improvements from 31st to getting better. Steve Spagnuolo said earlier this week that he's not going to focus on that part of it, about comparing whether his defense is going to be better than what you saw from the Chiefs under Bob Sutton. He just wants to get better every day. He wants to improve, and he's like, yeah, that's a cliche, but it is a cliche, but it's a fact. You need to get better every day, and this Chiefs defense, with all the new acquisitions, they're trying to learn things here during training camp, and it appears that things are going the right way for him. I love the videos that I'm seeing and the talk that I see from Tyrann Mathieu. You can tell he's out there and is just a great leader for this team. He's in his seventh year. He's a veteran on the team. In the defensive backfield, it's his first year in Kansas City, but you can tell he's come right in here and not worrying about, hey, I'm the new guy on the block. He's worried about getting this team to be better and getting this defense to be one of the top defenses in the NFL. And that's what I love about it, is you can see his passion. And you know, they put the pads on the other day. He's like, this is just a different feel once we get the pads on, and they go full pads, and he was ready to go. And guys like Juan Thornhill, Armani Watts, these younger guys that we're talking about, even Jordan Lucas, are going to learn so much from just playing with Tyrann Mathieu. This is a guy that can play basically every position on the field if you need him to. You can put him anywhere, and he's going to learn it, and he's going to be smart enough to do it, and he's going to cause some problems for the other team at those positions. So really liking what we're seeing, that I'm seeing anyway, here early on from Tyrann Mathieu, and I think the returns will be very good for the Kansas City Chiefs defense as far as that's concerned. Some other new guys that you're going to want to know and remember when they get on the field, probably not necessarily as much in these first couple preseason games, but you'll see him a little bit. We've talked, obviously, about Frank Clark and the motor that he brings at defensive end. He's loving every minute of the playing with Tyrann Mathieu and helping be a veteran leader for this team. Even though he's only in his fifth year, he's really still a veteran as far as the defensive line is concerned for the Chiefs. Again, they've moved on from Justin Houston, D. Ford, and have just really redone their end, their edges on the defensive line, which would include Frank Clark in the 4-3. Defensive ends Emmanuel Ogbah and Alex Okafor will both sign here in the offseason as well. Two old Big 12 players, Ogbah from Oklahoma State and Okafor from Texas. So those are two guys at the defensive end position that you're going to keep your ears out and eyes out for. Chris Jones is back, has decided not to hold out, and he's on there. Colin Saunders is the rookie out of Western Illinois that they're talking big about at the defensive tackle position. And don't forget Derek Nottie, who really came on there toward the end of his rookie season out of Florida State there last year, and I think could really be a pretty big help for this defensive line in the new system, in the new scheme, in the 4-3. Playing on the inside there for the Chiefs. Xavier Williams, another defensive tackle that we'll keep an eye on as well. So those are the guys on the front line. And then the linebackers, they've made some acquisitions in the offseason. Darren Lee was one of those guys from the Jets, and then they picked up Damian Wilson from the Cowboys. Still have Anthony Hitchens and Reggie Ragland from last year that were linebackers. We'll see if they can thrive and do a little bit better in this 4-3. Dorian O'Daniel's a guy that they really, really liked last year, and I think that Coach Spagnuolo really likes as well on this team. And then Tano Passano is a guy that we haven't Wade and I both are kind of like, where does he fit in? But we'll find out. You know, Spagnuolo talked about him the other day. He said he's just got a motor. He's going to do good, and I think he can be a good player for us wherever we might want to put him. But then he's basically like, we got to figure out where to put him and could do some good things. Tano Passano in his third year out of Villanova. TK, if you want to make it easier. If you're looking at his name, it's hard to say. So those are the names to look for. And then Breland Speaks is a guy that he was the first pick of the Chiefs draft a couple years back. He was a rookie last year. And I got to be honest, Breland Speaks looked slow last year to me. And maybe I shouldn't be one to talk. I'm really slow. But he just kind of looked slow. He just didn't look like he had the right makeup to be that kind of outside linebacker that you're looking for. He looks more like maybe a run-stopping defensive end if you could get him to be that. I mean, 6'3", 285. I didn't feel like I saw enough. Maybe I didn't see enough of Breland Speaks last year. Maybe we need to see more of him this year. But with all the other guys that are on this team, and he's listed a linebacker, I don't see where he fits in, to be completely honest. Tano Passano fits in a little bit more on like an edge guy. If they need something else to seal that edge on the 4-3 even, as a defensive end, I don't see that with Breland Speaks right now. But again, he was just a rookie last year. He's going into his second year. That could all change here in year number two. So I'm just kind of interested to seeing what the Chiefs can do. We got to wait another week. Next Saturday is the first preseason game to actually see them in action and to see what these guys can do. But again, one less defensive player than we had at the start of the season, at the start of training camp for the Chiefs, and Tremont Smith as he moved over from running back. And if you missed our discussion about that, you can go to our Sports Ticket podcast and listen to what we talked about yesterday. So, again, the Chiefs getting ready to start preseason. They'll start at 7 o'clock next Saturday against the Cincinnati Bengals. So that wraps up our Chiefs talk. One other thing that we wanted to talk about here, Dallas Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones says he believes a contract extension will be reached with running back Ezekiel Elliott, but the organization will not bend in its desire to do a deal that will allow it to keep all its talent under the same roof. So they're focused on keeping guys like Dak Prescott and all these other guys that are going to be up for extensions here soon as well. And they don't want to give too much money to Ezekiel Elliott that'll handicap them and strap them for cash later on. So it sounds like Jerry Jones says he wants to get it done, but he doesn't want to disrupt anything in the future. He says as far as doing something that would disrupt and shake the base of our plans or for how to keep the talent that we've got here, I'm not about to shake that loose. And that's what he said after Thursday's practice. Yet Jones said he still believes Elliott will be a Cowboy for a long time. He says, when have I ever not done one as far as an extension is concerned? And Jones acknowledged he does not believe there's a time when a deal has to be put in place like the start of the regular season. He says, I don't see a point. I don't see a point months into the season. He's like, I don't see where it has to be right now. And he knows that, but he still feels an extension would get done. Since the holdout has passed 6 days, the Cowboys can recoup a little more than $600,000 with a maximum of $1.02 million if Elliott's absence continues. So he's costing himself money as he continues to go on. Now that the holdout has extended this long, the Cowboys have the right to seek repayment of a prorated portion of Ezekiel's $16.35 million signing bonus. So that would come out of his bonus all the time that he sits out here. So he does lose money, but in the end, he's going to gain money if he gets the right extension that he wants. So that's the update on Ezekiel Elliott with the Cowboys. Again, I've always contended. They actually picked up Alfred Morris the other day, who used to play for the Cowboys and ended up leaving for the Redskins. They picked him up the other day to kind of add some depth at the running back position if they're not able to have Ezekiel Elliott on the field here this season. 9:56 the time here on KD Country 94. That'll wrap up the Sports Ticket for today. We thank everybody for listening here today and tune in again Monday for Waterside Wake Up on KD Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.